Imagine you're leading 25 complete strangers into a really dense forest.
Okay, setting the scene.
Yeah, and you've got this wild mix of people. Like, some of them look like they run ultramarathons on the weekends, right?
Oh, sure. And the
The
others?
others look like they haven't bought a new pair of hiking boots since, I don't know, 1992.
Yeah, you always get a mix.
Exactly. So the trail is slick with ice, your cell service completely dropped like 2 miles back down the road, and you are entirely responsible for making sure every single person makes it back to their cars safely.
That is a lot of pressure.
It is. How do you guarantee zero injuries and a 100% return rate in, well, an unpredictable wilderness?
You need a really solid system.
Right. And today we're looking at a literal masterclass in elegant systems design that solves exactly that problem. Welcome to this custom-tailored deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today we are exploring the Genesee Valley Hiking Club's Hike Leader Checklist, specifically version 7. And we're going to look at how this seemingly simple administrative tool is actually this really profound blueprint for organizational leadership and risk management.
It's just a fascinating document to dissect. I mean, the Genesee Valley Hiking Club has a 95-plus year history.
Wow, 95
Yeah,
years.
over 95 years. So when you're looking at version 7 of this checklist, you aren't just looking at, a few good ideas someone jotted down on a napkin over coffee.
Right, it's not just a rough draft.
Exactly. You are looking at nearly a century of institutional knowledge. It's been distilled and refined through all this trial and error about how to safely move groups of human beings through pretty chaotic environments.
Trial by fire, basically.
Pretty much every single rule on this page is likely there because of a past mistake or, a close call or some lesson they learned the hard way out on the trail.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the document doesn't actually start with trail mechanics at all. It starts by strictly defining its own goal.
Right, the success criteria.
Yeah, it explicitly outlines what constitutes a, quote, successful hike for the club. And the criteria are honestly uncompromising. First, participants had fun and got exercise.
Which is the whole point of a hiking club, yeah.
Obviously. But then, absolutely no hikers were left behind. Like, everyone who started the trail completed it. There were zero injuries. And finally, any medical issues that did pop up were handled promptly and with compassion.
That last part is so key. Setting the metric for success before you even begin is crucial in any leadership scenario. But that requirement regarding compassion, that is particularly revealing.
How so?
Well, it establishes a baseline culture, right? This isn't some military forced march where the weak are just left to fend for themselves.
Like, keep up or get left behind.
Exactly. It's not that at all. It is a community endeavor. But to achieve that flawless success rate,
Which is hard to do.
it's incredibly hard. To ensure fun while literally guaranteeing safety, it requires a massive amount of invisible architecture.
Invisible architecture. I like that.
Yeah, and this document provides a foolproof, multi-phase system to build that architecture. It transforms wilderness chaos into this manageable step-by-step sequence.
That invisible architecture, it has to be built days, or honestly, even a full week, before anyone actually shows up in their hiking boots.
Oh, absolutely, the preparation phase.
Right. The checklist requires the leader to conduct a dedicated recon hike. So you don't just rely on your memory of a trail from last summer.
Because things change.
Exactly. You have to physically go out there and test your assumptions against the current reality.
Yeah.
Like, a storm might have washed out a footbridge, or, I don't know, a logging company might have completely blocked the trailhead parking lot.
Nature is just a dynamic system. What was this nice, gentle stream crossing back in August could be a dangerous, completely iced over hazard in November.
Yeah, that would be a nasty surprise for 25 people.
Right. So the recon hike forces the leader to confront the environment as it currently exists, not as they remember it. The checklist also requires securing landowner permissions for the scouting, the hike itself, and the parking.
Which makes sense. You don't want to get 20 people cited for trespassing.
Exactly. But I think the true genius of this preparation phase is the requirement to scout alternate extraction points.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that. It's intense. The checklist specifically prompts the leader to think about completely different types of emergencies.
Right.
Like, you have to plan for what happens if someone twists an ankle versus what happens if someone experiences a sudden heart condition.
And those two scenarios require entirely different logistical responses.
Because one is mobility and the other is.
The other is life or death, yeah. A twisted ankle just means coordinating a really slow, assisted walk to the nearest intersecting crossroad where a car can be brought in.
Painful, but not necessarily a race against the clock.
Exactly. But a cardiac event, that is a time-critical medical emergency. You need to know exactly which trail access point can accommodate a full ambulance.
Wow, yeah.
Or you need to know precisely where the cell service is actually strong enough to call 911 or the New York State Ranger dispatch line.
Which deliberately is printed right at the very top of the checklist.
Yes, yeah. Front and center. The system basically forces the leader to run these failure scenarios in their head way before the pressure is on.
It's remarkably similar to, like, a Broadway dress rehearsal.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, because you wouldn't wait for opening night to find out the trapdoor on the stage is stuck.
Yeah.
You run the show beforehand in an empty theater so that when the audience finally arrives, the environment is just a completely known quantity.
That's exactly it. And when that recon hike reveals something unexpected, the checklist dictates that the leader's job is to immediately translate that physical reality into digital warnings.
Right, the meetup page.
Yes. They are instructed to go to the meetup webpage for the hike and post an update. So if the recon reveals a treacherous, iced-over slope, the leader posts a recommendation for everyone to bring crampons and trekking poles.
So they're essentially modifying the digital environment to protect people in the physical environment.
Precisely. By doing that, they bridge the gap between their own private preparation and the group's public readiness. We actually see this again with the protocol for fall hunting season.
Oh, the orange vests.
Yeah. The checklist dictates that the hike leader and the trail sweep must wear bright orange safety vests or hats. But it goes a step further.
By making the hikers wear them too.
Well, it requires the leader to use that meetup page to remind the hikers to wear bright orange clothing as well. So risk mitigation actually begins in the hikers' living rooms long before they even start their cars.
That is so proactive. And you also have to navigate the club's administration during this phase.
Oh, the paperwork.
Yeah, the glorious paperwork. You must download and print the absolute latest version of the hiker sign-in sheet directly from the club's website. Like, you can't just use an old photocopy you found crumpled up in your glove box.
No, it has to be current.
It has to be current. And if weather forces a cancellation, there's a strict separate club policy that you have to trigger.
Right.
So the environment is scouted, the digital warnings are up, the paperwork is pristine. But all of that is really just managing the terrain.
Yeah, that's the easy part, relatively speaking.
Exactly. Because the real variables multiply the second human beings start pulling into the parking lot.
And that transition from theory to practice happens right at the trailhead. This is really where the psychological management begins.
The people wrangling.
The people wrangling, yeah. The checklist mandates the leader arrive at least 15 minutes early, regardless of the weather. The only exception is if the county has literally ordered vehicles off the roads.
So the leader is basically the anchor.
They have to be. Mm. Now, as people arrive and start signing that specific clipboard sheet, the leader's most critical task is identifying the trail sweep.
Right. And the checklist actually requires equipping the sweep with a whistle or exchanging cell phone numbers.
Which it notes is especially important for large groups, like 25 people or more.
Because you can't just yell and expect the back of the line to hear you.
Exactly. The trail sweep is the critical mechanism that turns just a loose crowd of people into a managed system. And the sweep is given three absolute non-negotiable jobs.
Okay, what's job one?
Job one. You are always the last person on the trail. No exception.
Nobody walks behind the sweeps.
Nobody. Job two. If you lose sight of the main group, you blow that whistle immediately. Stop the hike.
And job three.
Job three. If a hiker is struggling, the sweep handles it.
Like physically helping them.
Or logistically. They might designate an alternate sweep to stay with the main group while they shorten the route for the struggling hiker, or even escort them safely back to the trailhead.
Wow. So it creates a perfectly closed system.
It really does.
The leader forms the front boundary, the sweep forms the back boundary, and absolutely no one exists outside of that containment.
And with those boundaries firmly established, the leader calls for what they term circle time.
Circle time.
Yeah.
Sounds a bit like kindergarten, but it's super serious here.
It is. It's a formal huddle before a single step is taken onto the dirt, and it serves a dual purpose, rule setting and community building.
Right. Laying down the law.
They lay down the absolute laws. No pets, no radios, no smoking, period.
And the golden rule.
The golden rule of the club. If anyone has to leave the hike for any reason, someone leaves with them.
No hiker ever walks alone.
Never.
But I noticed they also use this huddle to kind of pitch the club's history, right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a sales pitch, too.
They mention the 95 years of tradition. They remind everyone that the annual dues are just $10.
which is a bargain, honestly. Seriously.
Yeah.
And they talk about upcoming picnics or executive meetings. They also do a gear review, checking if people brought water, sunblock, or gaiters to protect their shins from thorns.
Right. Checking readiness.
But here's my question. If you're listening to this thinking, hey, I just want to go for a casual Saturday stroll, you might be wondering about the intensity of this briefing.
Oh, for sure.
Because the leader is explicitly instructed to detail the hike's length, the elevation gain, all the obstacles, and the exact speed. Like a strict 20-minute per mile pace.
Yeah, they spell it out.
The checklist says, this is so at-risk hikers can decide if it's too challenging, but does laying out all these harsh realities right there in the parking lot kind of kill the vibe?
Yeah.
It sounds a bit intimidating to me.
Well, it might sound blunt, but if you look at it from a systems design perspective, it is a brilliant exercise in informed consent.
Informed consent. Okay, tell me more. By explicitly stating the pace, the thorns, the steep hills up front, the leader is empowering participants to make a totally realistic assessment of their own abilities before the fatigue actually sets in.
Ah, so it essentially filters out the risk before the hike even begins.
Exactly. It creates a psychological off-ramp. Think about it. Admitting you can't keep up with a group, that is socially very difficult.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to be the slow one.
Right. People will push themselves to dangerous levels of exhaustion just to avoid the embarrassment of speaking up on the trail.
Which leads to emergencies.
Exactly. So by stating the harsh realities clearly right there in the parking lot, the leader removes that social friction.
That makes total sense.
If a hiker realizes a 20-minute mile pace up a steep grade is just beyond their current fitness level, they can self-select out with dignity right there at their car.
Rather than triggering a massive medical emergency 2 miles deep into the woods.
Exactly. It is fundamentally an act of protection, disguised as a warning.
Setting the expectations that clearly leaves absolutely zero room for dangerous misunderstandings.
None at all.
And the final mechanism in this trailhead huddle is the first name count off.
Ah, yes. The double verification system.
Yeah. Every single person in the circle has to say their name aloud, and the leader counts. And the highest vocalized number must perfectly match the number of signatures on the clipboard.
The psychology of this count-off is just fascinating.
Because it's not just a head count, right?
No, it's way more than that. When you just sign a piece of paper, you are totally anonymous. You're just a passive participant.
That's just scribble on a page.
Right. But when you are standing in a circle and you look around and vocalize your name to the entire group, you break that anonymity. You are acknowledging your presence, and the group is actively acknowledging you back.
It's like a verbal contract.
It establishes vocalized commitment. You are now officially part of a tribe, and you are bound by the rules of the leader and the sweep.
And when that verbal count finally matches the clipboard, the theoretical preparation becomes physical reality. The group steps onto the trail. The hiking phase actually begins.
And the hike leader's job during this phase requires intense, constant vigilance.
Oh, yeah.
The very first rule the checklist emphasizes for the physical hike is that the leader must maintain a constant line of sight with the trail sweep.
Always.
Always. Because if the leader loses sight of the sweep, that closed system we talked about, it is completely compromised.
You know, it makes me think of the hike leader and the trail sweep as the two ends of a giant rubber band.
Okay, I like this analogy.
Yeah. They have to keep the tension of the group perfectly calibrated. The leader sets the rhythm, right? The pace and the forward momentum. But the sweep anchors the reality of what the group can actually handle.
Yes.
So if the leader pushes too fast, the group stretches out, line of sight is broken, and the rubber band snaps. But if the leader goes too slow, the group brunches up, the momentum dies, and the rubber band just goes totally slack.
That analogy captures the dynamic perfectly. Managing that specific tension is exactly why the checklist advises the leader to build in intentional strategic pauses.
Water breaks, basically.
Well, yes, but these pauses aren't just for hydration or letting people adjust their clothing layers. They are actual diagnostic tools for the leader.
Right, because while everyone else is, you know, looking at the trees or digging in their backpacks for water, the leader is instructed to perform these quick visual scans of the entire group.
They are actively hunting for the silent strugglers.
The people who won't speak up.
Exactly. The people who are staring at their boots or breathing way too hard or lagging slightly behind. The ones who won't blow the whistle because they don't want to be an inconvenience to the group.
Which brings us right back to that success criteria we discussed at the very beginning, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Compassion.
It really does. True leadership on the trail is a continuous feedback loop of compassionate observation.
It's not just a math equation.
No, you aren't just marching toward a GPS coordinate. The leader has to actively interpret the physical cues of the group and be willing to adjust the planned route or shorten the duration or just slow the pace based on human endurance and real-time conditions.
You manage the reality in front of you, not the ideal plan on your clipboard.
Exactly. It is dynamic management in its purest form.
So you rely on the plan built during your recon hike, but you have the total operational flexibility to alter it the second that rubber band gets too tight.
Precisely.
And eventually the trail loops back, the trees clear, and the group finally sees the parking lot again. The physical walking stops. But, and this is crucial, the moment the group steps off the dirt and back onto the asphalt, the duty of care actually shifts into a completely new gear.
The post-hike phase begins.
Right, because the physical exertion is over, but the administrative responsibilities are still very much active.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the very first things the checklist notes for this phase is reminding hikers to turn off their GPS route tracking apps.
Which is such a specific detail. We will definitely revisit that point because it actually holds a much deeper implication.
It really does.
But following that, the leader is encouraged to build upon that community identity that was established during the trailhead huddle.
The social aspect.
Yeah. If the leader is available, they might invite the group to a nearby coffee house or a local restaurant or a pub.
You survive the elements together and then you shift from a survival dynamic to a purely social one.
Exactly. Breaking bread together turns what could just be a one-off Saturday afternoon walk into a lasting community membership.
It builds the club.
It does. But before anyone can drive off to that pub, though, there's a totally vital instruction regarding the parking lot itself.
Ah, the parking lot rule.
Yes. The checklist specifically states, quote, tip, don't leave the parking area until every hiker has started their car. It explicitly warns leaders to watch out for dead batteries or flat tires, especially during the winter months.
It just demonstrates how holistic this system of care really is.
It's incredible. It's a seamless extension of the safety net.
Mm-hmm.
Your responsibility as a leader doesn't end just because the group finished walking.
Right.
Your responsibility ends when every single individual is safely secured in a running vehicle capable of actually getting them home. You don't just abandon your team in a freezing parking lot just because the trail portion of the day is technically complete.
It really is a remarkable standard of care. And, you know, when you view this document as a holistic system, you really start to appreciate the document change history that's included at the very end of the checklist.
The version control log.
Yeah. The history tracks the checklist's evolution over time. It shows exactly how a community continuously refines its methods.
And you see specific names credited in that changelog, right?
Yeah.
People like Tom Kay, Derek Price, Laurie O'Haron, Patty Mangarelli. It reads less like some dry HR manual and more like this collaborative ledger of inherited wisdom.
That's a great way to put it. The change history reveals an organization that actively modernizes its tactics while fiercely protecting its core values. Well, for example, the history notes the removal of this old instruction that actually required leaders to use the U.S. Postal Service.
Wait, like mailing a letter?
Yes. They had to physically mail the sign-in sheet to the ex-president of the club.
Oh, wow. That is old school.
Right. But the new protocol, it instructs leaders to simply use their cell phone cameras to photograph the sign-in sheet and email it straight to the archiving service.
Okay, so the technology updates.
Right.
Like moving from postage stamps to emails or adding the cell phone number exchange between the leader and the sweep. But the fundamental goal remained absolutely identical.
Exactly. They are maintaining a pristine, unquestionable paper trail for safety and accountability.
It just proves that a truly effective best practices guide is never a stagnant document. It is this living, breathing framework that constantly adapts to new tools and new insights, continuously tightening that invisible safety net.
It really is.
Looking at the entire architecture from start to finish, the Genesee Valley Hiking Club checklist operates so far beyond the scope of a simple walk in the woods.
Oh, miles beyond.
It is a highly refined, totally time-tested template for meticulous preparation, uncompromising communication, and deeply compassionate group management.
And that's the real takeaway here.
Yeah. If you strip away the trees and the hiking boots, the mechanics of this checklist could honestly be applied to managing a corporate team, running a complex construction project, or just leading any organization through a period of extreme unpredictability.
It highlights a universal truth about leadership. Keeping people safe, cohesive, and happy in a chaotic environment requires highly intentional design. It doesn't just happen by accident.
No, never.
But, you know, exploring this checklist raises a much larger question, I think. And it's one that ties directly back to that specific instruction in the post-hike phase we mentioned earlier.
Oh, the reminder for the hikers to turn off their GPS tracking app.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, why is that so significant? I mean, from a practical standpoint, the checklist includes that reminder simply to save cell phone battery life,
right?
Or to prevent hikers from accidentally logging their drive home down the highway as part of their hiking route.
Well, sure, practically speaking, yes. But looking at it through a much broader lens, it sparks a really compelling thought.
I'm intrigued.
Think about it. In our hyper-connected modern era, we are so accustomed to just outsourcing our safety to technology.
Oh, 100%.
We track our every single step, our exact elevation, our heart rates, our global coordinates. We are constantly, constantly tethered to satellites and these glowing little screens in our pocket.
Yeah, we feel like the phone is what's keeping us safe.
Right. But this checklist reveals that when you actually step into a truly unpredictable environment, your ultimate safety doesn't actually come from a microchip at all.
It doesn't.
No, it comes entirely from the human element.
Wow, yeah.
It comes from a well-prepared leader who literally took the time to arrive 15 minutes early just to scout the ice in the parking lot. It comes from a totally watchful trail sweep walking exactly 10 paces behind you.
The rubber band.
Yes. And it comes from the sharp analog blast of a simple plastic whistle cutting through the trees.
That's incredibly powerful.
It makes you wonder, does true immersion in nature, and even more importantly, true reliance on a community, does it actually require us to deliberately sever those digital tethers?
Because when the screens finally go dark and you actually turn off that GPS app, all that is left keeping you safe are the people standing right there around you.
Exactly. You have to trust the system and you have to trust the group.
We started this deep dive by noting how taking a walk in the woods feels like it should be the most elemental, uncomplicated thing in the world. But it only feels simple because someone else did the incredibly complex, invisible work of planning for the chaos.
The invisible architecture.
The invisible architecture. Let that linger in your mind the next time you step onto a trail, or honestly, the next time you are asked to lead a project. When the devices are powered down and the variables start multiplying, are you prepared to be the safety net? Something for you to mull over.